You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com. Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
In the past few decades, dogs and cats have moved from the backyard to the bedroom. We celebrate their birthdays, have nanny cams we can check on them when we're away, feature them on our holiday cards, and spend more time trying to figure out what to feed them than deciding on our own dining choices. If you're like most pet parents, a trip to the pet store can be overwhelming when you gape at the row upon row of pet food choices. Premium, organic, grain-free, free-range, holistic, raw, natural. What does it really mean? Should you cook your own food? Who do you turn to for credible information? The kid at the pet store, Dr. Google, or your veterinarian? So step away from that bag of kibble, put down that can of pet food, and relax for the next half hour with your favorite dog or cat by your side for an enlightened pet food primer by Dr. Oscar Chavez, Chief Medical Officer and Senior Formulator at Just Food for Dogs. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Are you confused by the overwhelming number of supplements for your dog? Developed by a veterinarian, Dr. Baker's all-natural canine system saver is designed to address many of the common problems your dog faces today, including allergies, inflammatory diseases, arthritis, hip dysplasia, geriatric problems, and more. Restore and maintain your dog's health with Dr. Baker's all-natural canine system saver. Order two bottles today and receive 20% off plus free shipping. Visit CanineSystemSaver.com.
To get this special offer, enter coupon code RS20 at checkout.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Chavez, thank you for being with us. I know your food now for quite a while, and it's really quite different. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to talk about our food anytime and just this whole topic of veterinary nutrition.
And that is such a topic. Before we get into it, give us a little background of who is Oscar Chavez and how did you come to be the Chief Medical Officer and Senior Formulator at Just Food for Dogs?
Okay, well, primarily, I'm a pet parent, and I grew up loving animals, and I knew that I loved biology and science, but the idea of working with sick people never appealed to me, and the idea of working with animals did, and so I was in college, actually undeclared, and didn't have really an idea of what to do until I got my first puppy. Her name was Shadow. She came down with parvo because, believe it or not, at that age, I knew nothing about what to do and vaccines. And now, looking back, it was such a mistake. But obviously, your first-time pet owner, you don't know these things. And she ended up getting parvo. And I called around and I said, what can I do? And everyone was quoting thousands of dollars in hospitalization, and I couldn't afford that. Finally found one vet clinic that was willing to help me nurse her back to health. They said, look, this is not ideal. She might die, but it's better than doing nothing. And we'll give you some of the supplies. And if you can do it, then, you know, it's on you. Well, long story short, she got better. That closed it for me. I changed my major, declared it as pre-vet or pre-med a few weeks later. And then the second part of the story was a second dog that I got. His name was Ray. He's a golden retriever. And at this point, now I'm a vet and I'm working at Cal Poly Pomona University as a director of the veterinary technician program there, the animal health science program. And Ray comes down with renal disease. And at this time, Sean Buckley, the founder of Just Food for Dog, is going around trying to figure out who can run their feeding trials. And he didn't want to do it the conventional way because he looked into it and it turned out that most of the feeding trials done on food are done in USDA facilities with beagles that are fattened up and thinned out and live their life for animal testing. And he wanted to do it a more humane way. So he wanted to see if we can run the trial at Cal Poly Pomona University using student-owned dogs as researchers. And long story short, we did. I also started my dog on the food. And what clinched it for me was that within about 6 months to 8 months of starting on the renal formulation from Just Food for Dogs, he started concentrating his urine again, which means in medical terms, his kidneys are starting to work again. Now, this isn't supposed to happen. As far as we're concerned, renal disease is progressive, which means it only gets worse. And the specialist that worked with us, Dr. Stegman, she thought, well, this can't be explained. We obviously can't say cure because you don't cure renal disease. So we're just going to say it's very well managed. Well, that clinched it for me. That made me realize that, you know, Just Food for Dogs is going to be a veterinary brand. Not only are they doing feeding trials, but they're making a difference in my dog and in other dogs. And I made the difficult decision of leaving a tenure track faculty position, only 1 year away from tenure, to join Just Food for Dogs full time. And if you look at my past, all the major decisions of my career have been shaped around my pets. So primarily, I'm a pet parent. Secondarily, I just happen to be a vet.
Well, that is an awesome story. And you also, if I remember correctly, did not go to a veterinary school in the United States, so you bring a perspective from outside of our borders.
Correct. So what ended up happening for me is I went to undergrad at UC Berkeley, which is in Northern California. And at the time, the only other veterinary school in California was UC Davis, which is also in Northern California. And after a few years in at Berkeley, I really wanted to get out. And I looked at options abroad, and I was actually willing to, because I wanted to live, when I said get out, I meant get out. I wanted to live abroad and kind of experience something new. And I was actually willing to do whatever hurdles I had to do to translate my foreign degree into an American degree, if that became an issue. But what I found was that there was a handful of world-class institutions around the world that were accredited by the American Veterinary Medical Association, and that graduating from them was just like graduating in the States. And one of those was the Royal Vet College, which is, by the way, the first English-speaking vet school in the world, and the second vet school in the world. The first one was French. And I ended up getting this world-class education abroad, being able to live in London for 5 years, because their program is a five-year program. And it was the best experience of my life. It was the only place I wanted to go, and I was lucky enough to get in, and the rest is history.
All right. I'm jealous. It sounds like it was a great experience. Now, one of the things that I find very frustrating in our veterinary schools, and things are changing somewhat, is our training in nutrition. Nutrition seems to make such a major difference for the health and well-being of people as well as pets. And yes, you know, we were given some of the basics, and I'm sure things have changed since I went to UC Davis in Northern California. How was it in Europe? How was it in London?
Well, we actually had a pretty solid nutrition course that would later become the foundation for what I ended up focusing on. The caveat there, though, was that it was a solid formulation and nutrition course, but in livestock nutrition. So all of the basics in formulating diets, I learned from formulating diets for horses and for cows, cattle and sheep, et cetera. So there's a limited amount of ingredients that you use, and there's only a certain macronutrients that you're focusing on, because you're not really providing nutrition for 15, 20 years. You're just providing nutrition for 3 to 5 years, enough to sort of provide food for people. And what's interesting about that is, because I got that really solid foundation and I actually absorbed that information, I was able to apply that to the 45 or so essential nutrients that dogs and cats need, and just expand the profile, the nutritional profile, and formulating for dogs and cats became pretty easy to me, thanks to the foundation that I got at the Royal Vet College on formulating for livestock.
I find it fascinating. A lot of people say, you know, going out and going to the pet stores and buying these pet foods, canned or dry or frozen, whatever formulation they're looking at, going, why don't I just feed them off the table? You know, I can feed them as balanced a diet. And for years, eons, people have just been feeding, you know, the leftovers, what's on, you know, their plate goes into their pet. And we're finding, boy, the nutritional needs of a pet, a dog or a cat really are quite different than that of a human being's. And it seems like there's been an advent of these boutique pet foods, especially after that 2007 pet food recall where they had the tainted products from China. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, and I think it's a very good question because you're right. It's what's the danger in people food, right? And vets have been sort of programmed to say people food is bad. People food is bad, yet all the trends are showing, and Just Food for Dogs is sort of leading that trend, that actually the ingredients of people food, human edible foods, is what's transforming a lot of pets' health and is much better than the processed kibble or cans that are out there. So what's the truth behind these myths? The reality is that human edible ingredients, so they say that human grade doesn't have a true legal meaning, and that's true. Human edible does. Human edible means that it's gone through a process of regulation, both with handling, storage, and transport, that all the other foods are not subject to. So human edible, fit for human consumption ingredients are of higher quality because they go through all that regulation. And if you're going to make a balanced diet for a dog or cat, you want to use the best ingredients, because if you do, you're going to get the best healthy outcome. And so there is truth to that, that you want a balanced diet. But what people are doing at home when they're sort of dropping a French fry for their dog, or taking a piece of trimming from a steak and giving it to their dog, or a piece of hamburger meat, is they're giving the worst part of the ingredient, right? And also, in case of a French fry, not necessarily properly prepared for that species, because we don't need to do deep fried food for them. We don't need it for ourselves either, by the way.
Tastes good.
And so what they're doing, yeah, tastes great, but it's not what's best for us, right?
Yeah, I know.
And so that's the people food that you want to avoid, because it's not properly balanced. No one has put some thought into it to make sure that all of the nutrition that a dog needs is there. And what you're doing is you're just essentially sort of giving these scraps to your dog, which might make them sick. So in the case of a fatty trimming from a steak, you might actually promote pancreatitis. So that's the people food we want to avoid. Now, when it comes to feeding them a complete and balanced diet, this trend towards using real ingredients to formulate a scientifically balanced, species-appropriate food for pets is transforming health, and I think it's the future of veterinary medicine.
People would probably be listening to you right now going, Dr. Chavez, it sounds marvelous, but boy, you know, I've been feeding my little Fifi dog, my little poodlette, hamburger and potatoes and carrots and green beans, and, you know, it's doing well. It's 10 years of age. How can you say it's going to make a difference if I feed a commercially prepared food such as yours? How do you respond to that?
Well, what happens if all you do is feed people scraps here and there is that you are undoubtedly going to develop, or the dog is undoubtedly going to develop, deficiencies over time. See, you and I, we have these things called cravings, and there is some research in human nutrition to show that that time when you're like, oh my gosh, I just need a glass of milk, chances are you're probably responding to a slight deficiency in calcium, and your body's telling you you need to get calcium, or maybe that ice cream, where you have a sweet tooth and you're thinking that it's the sweet tooth that's talking to you, but it might be that you need some calcium. Well, we don't let our pets really kind of go to the market and buy their own food. So the theory came around many decades ago that whatever we provide them should be complete and balanced from the start, since we're giving them all of their nutrition. It's the same idea behind why you and I should be taking a multivitamin every day in case we're not hitting all of our nutrition and having a complete and balanced meal. So we owe them that. We owe them a complete and balanced diet every day, because they're looking up at us to provide them a complete and balanced meal every day. And that's the reason why it makes sense to provide a diet made with human edible ingredients, but that's complete and balanced, as opposed to just scraps here and there. Now, to answer your question, why they've been doing okay is because, in large part, most of the time, people that do that, where they're dropping little scraps here and there, they're also supplementing the diet, I hope, in this case, with some kibble or some other food. And that kibble is very over-supplemented with vitamins and minerals that are synthetic, and that is unfortunately making up for the deficiencies. If they don't do that, then they will end up in the vet hospital in 1 or 2 years with some gross deficiencies, usually related to either calcium or vitamin D. Those are usually the big ones, sometimes phosphorus.
I think a lot of people listening to you right now, Dr. Chavez, are going, but what do you mean that the foods that are going into my pet's food aren't clean and wholesome? I look at the advertising, I read the labels, they tell me that it's really good stuff that's going into the can or going into the bag, and you're saying it's not overseen at all?
The biggest myth or illusion in the pet food industry is that there is any regulation or oversight. There is practically none. There are a few labeling laws that the FDA enforces, and the states will enforce those as well. But as far as the content of what goes into pet food, it's very lightly regulated, and there's virtually no policing it at all. To answer your question, while you see a picture of a grilled steak or a chicken breast, grilled chicken breast on the packaging, I can guarantee you there is absolutely no chicken breast or steak in that bag of kibble. There are two main categories of food in the U.S. There is human edible, which we've already discussed, and then there's feed grade. Feed grade is deemed suitable for animals to eat, but completely unfit for human consumption. You're not allowed to use it in human food. But they've said, you know what? It's perfectly fine to use this in pet food or in livestock. And by the way, they make no differentiation between an animal that's only going to live 3 or 5 years for food production or an animal that we hope is our pet and that we hope is going to live for 15 years or more. So these unregulated ingredients are being put into bags of kibble and cans, and then the pictures of the real food is being put on the packaging, which, by the way, here's an example of how unregulated the whole thing is, which, by the way, is technically not allowed. But you tell me one time that you haven't seen these one. I mean, it's in your question, right? You see these beautiful pictures of food and vegetables on the packaging, and that's misrepresenting what's inside the bag. That's actually not allowed. But since there's no policing it, everybody does it.
Scary. Chatting right now with Dr. Oscar Chavez. He is the chief medical officer and senior formulator at Just Food for Dogs. We're going to take a small break. Let your dog or cat out for a little bit of a walk. Be right back, and we're going to chat more about that pet food industry and what you're feeding your pet.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
They called it elephant skin. It was rough, wrinkly, like a Brillo pad.
His hair was falling out in clumps.
Petey stopped eating and all his hair fell out.
Our golden retriever, Sundance, he scratched incessantly. There was hair all over.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite is nutrition.
Within 2 weeks, the shedding slowed down to almost none. The scratching went away after a few days, and Sundance's coat was starting to get shiny and glossy.
It's a 180 turnaround. His skin has cleared up. He's not in pain.
If your dog has shedding, dry skin, excessive scratching
due to Dynavite,
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000. Dynavite for life.
DINOVITE.com.
Hi, I'm Dana Humphrey, the founder of Whitegate PR. We have been specializing in PR and marketing in the pet industry for over 10 years. If you have a pet product or service you would like to promote, give us a call. We can help create awareness for your brand on TV, radio, magazines, newspapers, and blogs. Feel free to reach me directly at 619-414-9307 or learn more on our website at whitegatepr.com or follow us on Facebook.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio. PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Chavez, you were talking about the fact that what we believe is in the bag or it's in the can isn't necessarily there. But if you look at a bag of food and it says AAFCO and it has these requirements, of it has a certain amount of protein and a minimum amount of fat and it has these vitamins, boy, it sounds really healthy and it has more protein, this one that's more expensive than the other one. What does AAFCO stand for, and does it really mean anything?
AFCO. We all love to talk about AFCO. It sounds really great. It's the Association of American Feed Control Officials. You can't have a better sounding name. It has American in the name. It has control. It has official. You would bet that that's a government agency that is overlooking everything, right?
Yes, well, I'm going to have healthy food.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, you'd be wrong. AFCO is a nonprofit private organization made up primarily of the industry itself. So some acronyms that make up AFCO is PFI, Pet Food Industry, AFIA, the American Feed Industry Association, you know, representatives of companies that make minerals, synthetic minerals for the pet food industry. All of these folks sit around a table twice a year. They come together. There is a couple chairs for the FDA and one chair for consumer advocacy, but that has only been added in the last 10 to 15 years. And what they do is they come together and they make decisions for pet food and write them down in something called the official publication. And that official publication is literally referred to as the model regulation because it has no power. It has no jurisdiction. It's a rule book that essentially says, if you were going to have rules on pet food, this is what they should look like. But then there's no AFCO police. There's no enforcement. It's left up to the states to interpret that if they want to, and there is no better example that this is an unregulated industry than the current lawsuits that was going on with Purina and Blue Buffalo, right? So Purina, I don't know if you know this, but Purina ended up suing Blue Buffalo saying that, hey, you say you don't put any byproducts and byproduct meal in your food, but we've tested your food. We did DNA testing and we found that sure enough, there's byproducts and byproduct meal in your little life source bits, which are these little nuggets that are inside of the kibble. And at first it looked like, oh my gosh, this is a big Goliath picking on little Blue Buffalo. This is going to backfire on them. But as time went on, it turned out there were emails that were exposed. And sure enough, Blue Buffalo had been actively putting in byproduct and byproduct meal while advertising that they would stay clear from all those things. Now, I ask you, who should be doing that work? Who should be looking at companies' labels, testing their product, making sure that what's in the product is what's on the label? And then when it's not, calling them out and sending them a letter or fining them. Who seems like that should be doing that work for the public?
It would seem like AFCO.
Right. But AFCO has no government power. They're a private nonprofit, so they don't have the jurisdiction to do that.
FDA?
So you would think that FDA, yeah, you would think that they should do that. They do have the jurisdiction. They just don't have the resources to do it. So there's no better example that this is an unregulated industry than the fact that if you want to call out a company that's not doing things right, you better hope that a competitor sues them and does the work for you in a private legal battle. Another example is the class action lawsuit that's occurring currently against Beneful. It's a class action lawsuit from consumers because no one else would call them out on things that are happening. So consumers got together and they're dealing with that. Another example. So I don't think that the FDA is, you know, they're all mean people that hate animals and all that. They just don't have the resources. For every issue that we might have with pet food, you can multiply that with issues in human food, and that's their priority. The only time they really get involved with recalls or anything is if there's a threat to humans, because that's their priority. So while they wish that they could do things about pet food, they really can't. They don't have the resources, and it's left to the public to kind of sort out on their own privately.
Well, this is, I can see in one respect, listeners might say, yes, it's the government getting involved in one more thing. You know, we want to have smaller government. Now they're looking into our pets' food, thinking that, okay, we hear about pet food recalls. The basis of those recalls is not necessarily the wholesomeness of the food, but contamination and contamination that can affect people. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, mainly, for example, bacteria like Salmonella and E. coli that makes it into raw foods or kibbled foods. And the concern is, in fact, some of the cases, they won't make the dog sick. So the dog can become a carrier of the Salmonella, but elderly people or the very young infants can become deathly ill. And that's why they recall those foods.
So they're not so much looking after the health and well-being of our pets, but the people, understandably. And the other thing I find very interesting, clients will come in saying, oh, I'm feeding this food and it's organic or it's holistic. It's like, what does that really mean? It's like, it's advertising. It's appealing to you. But do you really know what those words mean? And I presume, Dr. Chavez, that there is no oversight company, no overarching organization that says this is truly what holistic means, organic, or even natural for that matter.
Correct. So there is no legal meaning to a lot of these terms: holistic, fresh, organic. with respect to pet food. That is because essentially what happens is AFCO could get together and set legal definitions, but they rarely do so because it would have to be a definition they all agree on. And when you have some companies that represent AFCO that maybe not make dealing in organic foods, they don't want the other company to do so. So what they do is they leave a lot of these terms undefined. But to the point we were talking earlier, even if they were defined, they're not necessarily going to be enforced on who uses them. So you're right. There's a whole bunch of labeling. My favorite one is fresh. I see fresh on bags of kibble all the time. And let's think about that, okay? Because we think that we're involved at Just Food for Dogs in making fresh foods. But let's think about that term fresh. And usually it's the biggest font on the labels, right? And this is meat and other ingredients that have been put into a bag that are preserved to be totally stable at room temperature for 16, 18 months. Now, we don't have any food that's like that. And if we did, we wouldn't call it fresh, especially not if it's been open and kind of standing out for a few months, like many people keep their bags of kibble for that long. Yet, they get to slap on the label fresh. I considered fresh food that could go bad within 4 or 5 days if not kept in a refrigerator. Now, that's not necessarily the legal meaning, but that's what I would think as a consumer. Well,
common sense, yes.
Common sense. But since this is a term that's not legally defined, anyone can use it. And for a lot of people, just simply seeing it on the packaging is enough for them to go, oh, yeah, it must be fresh. There's nothing fresh about kibble. By definition, it's the opposite of fresh, yet you see it on bags of food.
The other thing we see on pet food containers all the time is the term meat byproducts. And one of the things I have a little bit of concern with, yes, the quality of the meat byproduct can make a major difference to the wholesomeness of the food. But people are saying, well, you know, my food doesn't have any meat byproducts in it. I'm going, well, I eat personally meat byproducts because, as I understand it, if it's not a muscle meat, it's considered a meat byproduct. So if you eat liver, calf's liver with onions and bacon, I personally don't like it, but okay, people do that. Or if you eat blood sausage, that would be a meat byproduct. Or one of my favorites is, being Hispanic, is menudo, and that's made with a meat byproduct. So as such, I don't think that's totally a bad thing. And your view on that?
I am so glad that you're asking this question because, like you, I was a born Peruvian. My parents moved to the U.S. when I was 4. So, like you, that sort of question really resonated with me when I first heard it, because Peruvians would eat beef heart and tripe and liver. And in the traditional sense of what you're talking about, then, yeah, those could be considered byproducts. But I've got 2 points on that. First, let's actually read the AFCO legal definition for meat byproducts, right? This is what's in that official publication. Meat byproducts, this is currently the legal definition. Non-rendered, non-meat, not striated muscle, including, but not limited to, lungs, spleen, kidneys, brain, livers, blood, bone, fatty tissue, and stomachs and intestines without content, does not include hair, horn, teeth, or hooves. So I ask you, what of what I just read kind of stands out to you?
Without the contents, I think, is some of it. So it doesn't have all, yes, the stuff that was inside those, but it's not terribly appealing.
Well, what jumps out to me, and I'll read it again, but not limited to lungs, spleen, kidney, brain, liver, blood, bone, fatty tissue, and stomach contents, right? So the legal definition of byproducts includes brain. We've learned our lesson in feeding brains from one species to another species. We've learned it in multiple species. Sheep that
mad
get
cow,
crazy,
yes.
Mad cow disease that get cow, humans that get their variant. Yet it's perfectly legal to feed the brains of animals to our pets and call it meat byproduct. So while your first point makes sense, hiding behind the legal definition of byproduct allows you to include things. And by the way, it says, but not limited to,
yeah,
you know,
so who knows include what
things.
Yeah.
So who knows what's in there? This is the second point I'd make. There is a huge difference, Bernadine, a huge difference between liver that is completely unregulated and the meat byproducts in this industry, the pet food industry, and USDA inspected and approved and then certified liver that has been deemed fit for human consumption, where a veterinary officer is signing off on it and they're getting a stamp of approval from the USDA. That's going through multiple levels of inspection and regulation in both transport and storage and in just handling. And none of that applies at all to byproducts in the definition for pet food. So I totally get the point, but it's not as simple as saying, hey, some cultures eat kidney and liver and tripe, you know, intestines without contents. So therefore, it's perfectly fine for a pet to do it, but that's not the quality that they're eating. They're eating the worst of the scraps from human consumption that is completely unregulated, sits in the vat, and then gets thrown into a blender with flies all around it, and it's starting to go bad, and they rely on the extrusion process, the kibble-making process, or the high-temperature canning process to kill any bacteria from the fact that it's gone bad. But what we're showing now is that that doesn't necessarily take care of the endotoxins created by those bacteria, so it still has ramifications to the health of the pet. That's the big difference.
So we've spoken about all the things that are going into these foods that may not be the best, the most balanced, most nutritious, wholesome, etc. And then comes along just food for dogs. And now, as I understand, just food for cats. How is it different?
Well, with just food for dogs, and now you're right, we have one feline diet with more to come. All we do is we've built these kitchens in Southern California, and we have 4 kitchens in Southern California and 7 total locations. And what we're doing is nothing more than getting all of our supplies from restaurant suppliers. It's the same meats and vegetables that you and I would eat, and they're coming to our kitchens, and we're cooking the food right there in the kitchen. Everything's lightly cooked. And we're formulating diets that are complete and balanced for dogs' nutrition and cats, but all using the same human edible ingredients that you and I are used to. So ironically, when you look at those bags with all the pictures of actual chicken breast and actual steak, that's what we're actually doing in a kitchen that's open to the public, that's transparent, where you can come see your food being made on any given basis. And we started cooking about 500 pounds of food a week. Now there's not a week that goes by that we cook under 32,000 pounds of food, because it's been a massive growth, and not because of anything special that we've done. All we've done is we've grown to keep up with the demand, but the demand is what drove the growth. Obviously, you have to do it right. You have to have vets on staff. We have 7 vets that we work with, and you have to, you know what you're doing. But really what's driven the growth of this company has been the demand for real food, actual food that you have to keep in the freezer and then defrost in the fridge and serve and use within 4 days. Fresh, real, whole foods.
But different animals have different medical needs. Some of them have different food allergies. Their taste buds are different. They go, oh, I refuse to eat anything that has a carrot in it. How is that addressed at Just Food for Dogs?
Yeah, so we do 3 major things at Just Food for Dogs. The first thing we have is a line of daily diets for healthy pets. Within that line, we have 6 varieties, 6 different recipes for dogs, and we have 1 recipe for cats. And then we have a line of veterinary diets. These require prescription from a veterinarian, and we're very strict about that because you know as well as I do that vets have to have the power of assigning these diets to the respective conditions. And those cover 8 different diseases, and there's different overlaps on them. And then we also still make our custom formulations for really sick pets. This is what the situation you're talking about, where we might have a renal diet and it's ready to go off the shelf, but it's lamb-based. And we might have someone come in and say, you know what, I did some consulting with the veterinarian and it turns out my dog is allergic to lamb, but he also has renal disease. That's where we would make a custom formulation for them. And this is our most premium service. I have 5 veterinary formulators that support me on this. And any given day, we're making 5 to 10 custom formulation inquiries and turning them into custom formulations. This is a very specialized service where that pet gets the exact diet that they need to address all of their medical conditions.
And if you have somebody who says, it sounds marvelous, but I want to cook for my pet, I want to make it in my house, is there a way for them to do that and still use the services of Just Food for Dogs?
Yeah, when we first opened and we made our recipes available to the public, our lawyers thought we were crazy. It's the only intellectual property that we owned, and this is a testament to our founder, Sean Buckley. He truly just wants to get dogs to be healthier. So he gave away the recipes. The only thing that people need in order to balance out the recipes for long-term feeding the way we do in our kitchens is the nutrient blend, the vitamin and mineral blend needed to balance it out. And so they can buy that off us in what we call our DIY kits or do-it-yourself kits. They're available online or in our stores, and people can purchase the nutrient blend, the recipe they already have, and they can make these diets at home. And that's the advantage of making food for dogs with real ingredients, is that I can give you a list of those ingredients and you can go get them. And as long as I tell you how I do it, you can do it yourself as well. And that's available for our 6 daily diet. For our custom formulations, once the recipe is made for that specific dog and their needs, what we do is we give them an option. We can make the food for you and we'll quote them for that, or we can make the custom nutrients, vitamin and mineral blend for you, and then you can make it yourself. And then it becomes up to them to do it. So we give them, our whole goal is to empower them to be the masters of their pet's nutrition. And many of these pet parents really want to do that. Whereas historically, the answer has been to try to get them away from making their own pet food. But now we're trying to give them the power to do it. And so far, that's some of our best results, is when people are making it at home and doing the custom formulation process.
And your foods are cooked, is that correct?
Everything we make is lightly cooked. We believe that raw is a little bit better than kibble, but the reality is that long term, there's usually something that happens that makes the dog sick. Either they get bacterial contamination, or a lot of these raw diets are extremely high in protein, and that taxes the liver and the kidney over time, or the urinary tract, and they get crystals and stones. So while raw food is at least more wholesome than kibble, we don't think that it's necessarily the right way to go. So we lightly cook everything because the USDA requires that meat bought from them be cooked. So they intend it to be cooked. There is no certification process for raw foods. So for the safety of our own workers in our kitchen, just like a restaurant would, and for the safety of the dogs and the people handling the food, everything is lightly cooked to minimum FDA temperatures.
Well, I'm fortunate because I live in Southern California and I can drive to your kitchen. But how about people that live on the East Coast and they go, yes, this is something I really want to try. I want to give my dog or cat just food for dogs, just food for cats. How do they get it?
I'm so glad you asked that. It turns out we have customers all across the country, and we have that because we have a really good shipping process. So we have a flat rate shipping for all frozen orders over $100. And we have customers that must have bought a freezer on the East Coast because they sometimes order $200, $300 worth of food at a time, and they get it all for the same flat rate. The flat rates are vary depending on where you are, but there's no rate that's over $39.95. So if you're on the East Coast, you could get our food shipped all the way over there for, you know, $39.95 or potentially even less. So it depends on your location. In California, it's $14.95, and it literally goes out the next day that you order it. So it's all by FedEx. It arrives frozen with dry ice, and it's a really good service, and a lot of people do get our food all across the country.
Dr. Chavez, if somebody wanted to learn more about Just Food for Dogs and now Just Food for Cats, where should they go?
Just go to our website, justfoodfordogs.com. There's a little tab that says Just Us. And we have just been named one of the top pet food blogs in the country, which we're very proud of. We actually think we might be the, because they have a, it's a list of the top 100, and we might be the first one that shows up that's a food company, which is pretty cool. So check out our website, check out Just Us. There's a lot of information, lots of detail about what we've talked about here, and learn about us and make an informed decision on what you feed your pet.
Well, one of the things I love about the motto for Just Food for Dogs is more life, more years, more love. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. We've been chatting with Dr. Oscar Chavez, Chief Medical Officer and Senior Formulator at Just Food for Dogs. Please listen again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important.
Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.